She was born in Kansas, the year 1897. As for where and when Amelia Earhart died, that's considerably more debatable. The famous aviator disappeared over the Pacific Ocean some 80 years ago, attempting to circle the world at its midline with her co-pilot, Fred Noonan. But something went wrong before the pair could land for a refueling stop. And the questions, they haven't stopped since. Did Amelia and Fred simply crash and sink in deep water? What about those people who swear they saw them taken prisoner by Japanese soldiers? Our next guest is here to talk about yet another theory, the castaway theory, and why we're still searching for Amelia Earhart all these decades later. He's an archaeologist and the executive director and president of the Eugene-based Archaeological Legacy Institute. Dr. Rick Pettigrew, welcome to The Exchange.
I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Could you start by telling us what the Archaeological Legacy Institute does? What are you guys all about?
Well, we were founded in 1999 basically to tell the human story. I'm an archaeologist, and I've always felt that what we've been learning about the human past has not been really very well shared with the general public. I've always had a lot of interest in media and in technology, and so when we were able to do streaming media from our desktop, I thought it would be a wonderful idea to do that through a nonprofit organization. And we did that. You know, we put up our first videos on the Archaeology Channel website in 2000. We've been doing that now since that time. So we basically are a media organization focused on telling people about the human past from an archaeological perspective. But that's just the beginning of the story. There's much more to it. We have our own film festival. We produce films. We do many different things.
And why is it important to bring this human story, as you put it, to a greater public profile through the Archaeology Channel and your website for the Archaeology Legacy Institute? Like, why does that matter?
Well, I think it matters because as human beings need to know where we all came from. I mean, I think we need to put some sense into the world that we see today. We can't really understand where we are and who we are and where, you know, why things are the way they are without understanding our past. And I think that having an evidence-based knowledge of the past is really important. So, and that's what archaeology is. It's basically hard data about the past.
Right. And I want to talk about the past that we've sort of come together today to address, which is the life and legacy of Amelia Earhart. Of course, that's not a household name just for how she died, but also how she lived. Could you tell us about her achievements and why her fame persists today?
Well, she was a hero in her time. She lived at a time when aviation was new, when aviation technology was all the rage. People were really excited about it. It was all over the news. Lindbergh was, of course, the first to pilot a plane across the Atlantic, but Amelia Earhart was the first woman to pilot a plane solo across the Atlantic. She set all sorts of other aviation records at that time as well, and she was on her way to being the first woman to pilot an aircraft around the world when she disappeared. So it was a huge story. She was a hero for everybody, but especially for women. And she was a pioneer in women's aviation, and she was very conscious of it at the time. And she helped found organizations that were devoted to promoting women in aviation. This was in the 30s, so let's put this in perspective. This is a long time ago. She was ahead of her time.
She sure was. There's a lot of interesting facts about Amelia's life in terms of her public presence, a high-profile marriage to George Palmer, George Putnam, of course, a publishing magnate. And some of the terms there, really, she demanded to be on more equal footing, I think, with men than we're often aware of, talking about women from that historical period. You, of course, mentioned this is the 1930s, and the fateful day that we're leading up to here is her disappearance on July 2nd, 1937. Could you take us up to that day? What was she attempting to do? We know she wanted to circle the world, but how far along was she, and what were some of the challenges that they expected there?
Well, this flight was well planned. She took off from Oakland, California, made her way across the United States to Florida, and then flew down through South America, over to Africa, through the Middle East, to India, Southeast Asia, Australia, and finally New Guinea. She took off from Ley, New Guinea, on the north east coast of New Guinea on July 2nd, intending to fly to Howland Island, which is a speck of land in the Pacific Ocean. It's only about 2 miles long. And that was the longest leg of her journey, about 2,500 miles. So it was the most difficult one over open water.
And the plane, it's the Electra here. Could you give us an idea of 2,500 miles over open water? What's the craft here?
Well, this was a plane that was a cutting-edge technology at its time. It was a fairly large two-engine plane with lots of room in it. She had lots of fuel on board. She had a navigator, Fred Noonan. His job was to keep her on course and help her, to guide her into that little speck of land where it was her only chance to refuel on her way to Hawaii and finally to Oakland. That plane was well-equipped. It had all the latest technology, communication technology. But unfortunately, when she arrived near Howland Island, and there was a Coast Guard ship there, the Itasca, that was sent there to guide her into Howland, she apparently was unable to receive any messages from the Coast Guard. They could hear her speak, and she did. And they communicated a lot.
What did she say?
Well, she said, well, here we are, basically. Where are you? And they used various protocols to try to establish communication, but it never succeeded. But she did report where they were and what they were doing. And one of the last communications was that they were going to fly along the 337-157 line of position, which was a line that navigators would know about. Fred Noonan had calculated. They figured they were close to the island of Howland Island, but they knew they were on this line that ran northwest-southeast. And they flew along that line, and that was the last that we heard from her.
Amelia Earhart on the line, the last we hear of her. On the line here is Dr. Rick Pettigrew. He is the head of the Eugene-based Archaeological Legacy Institute. Rick, if you would like to join this conversation with us, the phone number is 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. We're just sort of reliving these last moments of Amelia Earhart as we knew her, as the public knew her, as her fellow aviators knew her. Rick, it doesn't necessarily incite a burning mystery for me why two people flying over open water for 2,500 miles in a small two-engine aircraft would never be seen nor heard from. Again, why are we still talking about this 80 years later? Could we lay out some of the evidence for perhaps that not being the end of Amelia's life?
Right. Of course, everybody around the world was paying attention to this flight. It was all in the news. Radio was big, of course, by that time. People were following it. And then when she disappeared, the mystery really transfixed the world. And people went looking for her. The Navy went looking for her and so forth. But it's been a mystery. And people are really interested in mysteries. It's a big one. Probably, it might be the biggest mystery of the 20th century.
Evidence to supports that they didn't just crash into the ocean and sink into deep water? I mean,
well, of course, that's been, many people believe that's what happened.
And
of course, there'd be no way of demonstrating that. But Amelia and Fred were, they knew what they were doing. Fred was a very good navigator. He had lots of experience. They knew that if they flew along that line that I mentioned, that they eventually would reach an island. And they probably flew southward along that path. They knew that there was an island south of there called Gardner Island. Now it's called Nikumaroro.
Mm-hmm.
That island has a reef around it, fairly wide and fairly flat, actually. At that time, the tide was down. They could have landed on the reef. It definitely was feasible. It was within their range in terms of the amount of fuel they had. This hypothesis has been put forth by the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, or TIGER for
TIGER.
Short.
Mm-hmm.
They've been working on this for 28 years. I've been following this. My good friend Tom King is their archaeologist who has been to the island many times. So I've been following this, and I think they are onto something. There are many other explanations, of course, but this one has a lot of good evidence behind it.
The idea that Amelia and Fred were able to land on Nikumaroro Island, formerly known as Gardner Island. And when you look at this, you're right, it's like a scab of land there in the Pacific, a long way from any kind of a mainland, and it has blue in the middle as well as all around it. you say that they could have landed at low tide. What would have happened when the tide came back up?
At that time, and this has all been calculated, at that time the tides were low, generally. For a few days, the tides would have been low, and then they would have risen. So they had a narrow window of opportunity there on the reef where they could have sent radio messages. They had to have fuel. They had to power their batteries. They had to turn on the engines from time to time. And as a matter of fact, some messages weren't received. Later on, during that time, the Navy thought they were hoaxes, but now analysis indicates that they probably were not. Many of them probably were not hoaxes. They probably were real messages. Anyway, they've been going to the island, the Tiger Group, and they have now archaeological evidence, physical remains, which very likely are from Amelia Earhart.
They have physical remains. I was about to ask the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, or TIGER. They've already been to Nicomoraro Island 11 times. What have they found?
They've found a number of things. They've found fragments of a compact, glass from a compact. They've found pieces of bottles of cosmetics. They've found fragments of shoes. They have found food remains from someone who apparently, you know, was, you know, subsisting in a way that's different from a native person in that area. And I think that they've managed to pull together quite an array of evidence. Prior to that, in 1940, 13 bones were found, including a cranium and a sextant box were found. These remains were taken to Fiji Island, and they were analyzed and measured. Unfortunately, they were lost. The bones are gone. The sextant box is gone. But the measurements remain, and the measurements are consistent with Amelia Earhart.
Interesting. And so the bones were lost. That's 1940, just about a year after Amelia was declared dead, officially dead in absentia. If they've been 11 times, would a return trip likely turn anything new up on this island? I mean, it can't be more than a quarter square mile, I would guess. What is the size of Nicomoraro?
The island is about 7 miles long.
Oh, quite a bit.
Much bigger than Howland.
Yeah.
Much easier to see from the air. It has a large reef. The evidence, I think, is pretty good. Now, why are they going back? Oh, because they still have a chance to find more evidence. In fact, one of the exciting things on this trip is that on their last trip in 2015, on the very last day, they found a concentration of stones near where they think that Amelia and Fred would have camped while they were sending radio messages. A concentration of stones, what could be described as a cairn. They didn't have time to do anything with it except for uncover it and take pictures. But now they're going to go back. They're going to excavate beneath it. This could actually be the burial place of Fred Noonan.
Oh, interesting. You know, a wolf's grave or something to that effect. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Rick Pettigrew, president of the Eugene-based Archaeological Legacy Institute, about the search for Amelia Earhart. Yeah, it continues. And you can join us with your questions and comments, 800-838-3760. Rick Earhart and co-pilot Fred Noonan, they disappeared 79 years ago. This year, you are part of a bid to return to Nicomoraro Island and look for more evidence that the two actually ended up as castaways for a while. How much money are you trying to raise, and what activities would it support?
Right. We're working through Indiegogo. This is at Indiegogo.com. The campaign is called Amelia, Where Are You?, which is our tentative title for the film that we want to make. Mm. There's an expedition going next year in June and July. We want to be on board with our cameras so that we can document and record this research and hopefully some major discoveries while they're there, and then make a film about Amelia and the search for Amelia, which I think by itself is a dramatic story. As I said, we're a media organization. We have an archaeological perspective. This is basically an archaeological project. And it's a very high-profile project. So we're very excited about the opportunity to be there. But in order to do that, our Indiegogo campaign has to succeed. Again, the film is titled Amelia, Where Are You? And that's the name of the campaign on Indiegogo.com.
So how much money are you trying to raise?
We're trying to raise $66,000 in the span of 30 days, starting today. The campaign launches today.
Okay, and this is to get the film started. It doesn't sound, I mean, maybe I have a inflated view, but for an archaeological expedition to go to a remote island in the South Pacific, $66,000 to make a film as well. Is this to cover the travel expenses, the crew, how many people, and all of that?
It's basically just for two of us to go there.
Oh, two.
Yeah, this is a very expensive enterprise going to this remote island. We have to fly from Los Angeles to Fiji and then get on board the ship, which takes a few days to get to Nikumaroro. It's an expensive sort of operation. So we have to cover the costs of the travel as well as the infrastructure costs that we have for all this work. So there's lots to be done. There's lots to cover with this. Actually, for a film, this is not a huge amount of money.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
No, it's not. Actually, and this is just for the first stage of the film, which is capturing the footage, which, of course, if we don't do, we're not going to have a film.
So who else is going? It sounds like you and one other person?
Yes, our film director, Teal Grayhavens, who lives in Los Angeles, who is a graduate of South Eugene High School, who has been working with us since 2009. We've worked together on four projects, really involving Thailand, Malta, Guam, and most recently in Kansas. So we have some experience working together, and we have a track record and films to show for it.
So you're securing funding, hoping for $66,000 in this Indiegogo campaign launching today for a risky mission that mirrors the risky mission that Earhart and Fred Noonan took. Do you ever feel like you're tempting fate by returning to this area where she disappeared?
I don't know. It's going to be exciting. We're looking forward to the opportunity to do this. It's a once-in-a-lifetime sort of opportunity. And certainly if they find what they're hoping to find, it's going to be big news around the world, and we really want to be part of that, and we want to share that story with everybody.
Are you hoping to find remains?
It's very possible. As I said, this cairn or cluster of stones that they found, it fits with what we understand about what happened. It's very likely that Fred died first. She would have probably buried him. She would have wanted to cover the grave because the animals there would... Well, let's not go into the grisly details.
Mm-hmm.
She would have wanted to cover the grave and probably mark it. And so this is consistent with everything that we know. And, of course, it could be something else, of course, but we won't know until the excavation is done.
What would it mean to you to know, to be able to bring back the bones of one of these people or both of them?
It would be an accomplishment, a huge accomplishment, not only as an archaeologist, but as someone interested in telling the human story. The human past is full of all sorts of stories, individual stories, stories of groups of people, and so forth. It's a huge array of stories. And this is one that people know about, all over the world. So it has a great deal of significance to people. And one thing I want to do is I want to be able to show that archaeology has relevance to people today, that what this kind of research has meaning. And I think that if we come back with that kind of a story, many people will appreciate it.
What's the most surprising thing you've learned about Amelia Earhart's life or the circumstances of her disappearance in the course of preparing to make this film, Amelia, Where Are You?
Well, I think the most amazing thing is Amelia herself and, what kind of a person she was and how she stood out at the time. She was really a pioneer. I mean, I knew this, of course, growing up hearing the story, but reading about her, realizing what it took to go on this journey, this voyage that she took around the world, I think it's just more and more impressive the more you look into the details.
What about some of the other theories that we'll hear and that we'll find, perhaps listed alongside this one? Of course, you're talking about the possibility that her and her co-pilot were castaways. We've also heard, in addition to crash and sink, that maybe they were taken prisoner by Japanese soldiers. I've heard a crazy one that maybe Amelia faked her own death and so that she could go be a banker in New Jersey.
Right.
How do we know which theories are credible with something like this, especially where you're fundraising and you're hoping people will open their wallets to support your work and see it as evidence-based and science-based and not pie in the sky?
I'm really impressed by the Tiger Organization and the the rigor with which they've conducted this research. They're very objective. They have very high standards. And I'm a scientist myself, so I can recognize an objective empirical approach, and that's what they've followed. Then they have examined all the other hypotheses that have been put forth, and they've examined it critically. And when you look at all the details, I think the more you gravitate toward this hypothesis. And, of course, people have all sorts of wild ideas, alien abduction, Japanese prisoners. I mean, people have even said that maybe she was Tokyo Rose, Mm-hmm. There are all sorts of wild and crazy ideas. But if you look at the evidence carefully, things add up here. So this is not hopeful or wishful thinking. I think that the evidence here is nearly conclusive already. They just need to find, or they want to find, something that is absolutely conclusive. It may not end up being absolutely conclusive, but I think that the explanation already is in hand, actually.
All right, nearly conclusive already. And Dr. Pettigrew, last question here. We've been talking about how Amelia Earhart and Fred Noonan may have ended up on Nicomoraro Island. If you can raise the $66,000 in the next 30 days with this campaign to make a film about the theory or find evidence that Amelia disappeared there, how are you going to get to the island yourself?
How are we going to get to the island?
Yeah. How do you get there?
Well, okay, we fly with the expedition team. We fly from Los Angeles to Fiji, and then we get on board the cruise ship that they are taking to the island. So we are going to be going along with the expedition people, and we are going to be participating with them in the project. That's how we're getting there.
So you're on a cruise ship, and do you, jump off and swim? It's a coral atoll, right? I mean, it's 7 miles long, but I'm assuming there's not a place. Do you have to get in a small boat, like a lifeboat?
Yeah, that's right. So the cruise ship will anchor off the reef, and then a smaller boat will take people through passage through the reef to the island.
Well, best of luck to you, Dr. Rick Pettigrew. If you can get this campaign together, you can find out more about it on our website, jeffexchange.org. Rick Pettigrew, head of the Archaeological Legacy Institute based out of Eugene, thanks for being our guest today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.